Okay, great. So you have all the strength to go through with me through this session, which is titled Building Data-Driven Applications Fast with WCF, RIA Services, and Silverlight. Again, I seem to have all long session titles this year. So, what we'll be doing in this presentation is we'll be taking a look at how we can build data-driven applications using Silverlight and RIA Services together to build them actually really fast. You'll see that we'll have, at the end of the talk, a complete application from start to finish. Let me first introduce myself. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I'm Regional Director for Microsoft here in Belgium, and I'm an MVP for ASP.NET. In my daily job, I work as a .NET architect at Ordina. I'm also very active in the community as a speaker. I'm the user group lead for Visage. And I've also written a book on Silverlight, which will be released really soon, about the end of April. It'll be available. It's called Silverlight for Data and Services Cookbook. I've also put up my blog there, as well as my email. I will be uploading the slides of this talk, as well as the demo that we'll be making together. I think I'll do that tomorrow on my blog. So it's www.snowball.be. So head over there tomorrow if you want to download today's material. I've also set up my Twitter for the people that want to follow me. So simply at Gilles Kleren, and you can follow whatever I'm doing or saying. So now about this talk. I actually, when I was assigned this presentation, I was thinking to myself, well, I have two options with RIA Services. Either I'm going to do a standard presentation explaining all the things and the concepts that are available and that are making up RIA Services. Or I had another choice, and that choice was actually doing a few slides, and then we're going to a demo, and we're going to build a huge demo, actually. It's going to take about 45 minutes to actually build from start to finish. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do too many slides. I'm going to focus on the demo, and all along the way, I'm going to explain you the concepts that make up RIA Services. And I hope this way, RIA Services, it's quite complex. It's not complex to understand, but it's quite huge because there are quite a lot of things to explain what it really is, what it can do for you, how you can use it. And I thought doing them in a demo might make it easier to get a grasp of RIA Services. So that's what I've chosen. So the agenda is the following. So I'll start, of course, with a few slides to explain some of the concepts of RIA Services. I think I have six slides or so. And then we'll go to the demo. It says here 30 minutes. I think it will more or less take 45 minutes. And we're going to build an end-to-end application together. I've prepared some snippets to make the typing less time-consuming. But for the rest, I'll be building an application together with you. And after that, I hope we still have some time left to do an under-the-hood look at RIA Services. During the demo, I'll be explaining some of the concepts which might not be completely clear. But during the under-the-hood section, I will be taking a look at some of the concepts in more detail. More specifically, I'll be taking a look at the design time view. What has RIA Services done while I was designing my application in Visual Studio? Secondly, I'll be taking a look at the runtime view, what is happening when you run the application built with RIA Services. And finally, we'll be taking a look at services very briefly, services from ASP.NET that integrate nicely with RIA Services. And then I have one slide that is a few do's and don'ts using RIA Services, and that's our some takeaways. So let's get started. As said, we'll first have to explain what RIA Services is before you can actually start understanding what it will do for you. Now, one of the things that you have to know before you can understand what RIA Services is perhaps what problems does RIA Services actually solve. So this is actually a slide containing a N-tier architecture of a RIA Services application, for example, Silverlight architecture. And what you see on the left there is your database, where you get your data. The data, of course, can also come from a web service that actually does not matter at all. And then, of course, we have the server tier, the middle block of my application. That's also called the mid-tier. And that contains some data access code. Data access code can be built using Entity Framework, can be built using Anhibernate, or some other data access technology. In fact, for now already, RIA Services is not concerned with the data access technology you'll be using. So you can use your own preferred data access technology like you're used to. Then on top of that data access layer, we have our normal business logic. Some validation rules, some other business logic that has to check the data before it goes to the database or verify the data when it comes from the database. There's nothing special about those things. Now, then the third on the right, the third block is actually the presentation tier. And the presentation tier, even more with a RIA application, has to be quite smart. What I mean by that is you don't want a fast RIA application, like a fast Silverlight application, that for each and every data the user is typing in has to go to the server, perform some checks there, and then can show you the result. You want to have that validation logic on the client side because you want your application to be responsive. That means that we have, as you can see, application logic on both sides of the tiers, actually on both tiers, let's say. On both sides of that arrow. Now, RIA Services will actually be concerned about the block that I'm now circling. And what happens is when you go from your mid tier, so your server tier, to the presentation tier, there is like a boundary that has to be crossed. You go from a server machine somewhere to your client machine. And it has to be some rules there, what will be exposed to the client tier and what will not be exposed. And it is also referred as a trust boundary that has to be crossed at a specific time. And RIA Services is actually, mindful about those RIA, about that trust boundary. Now, what you also see is that I have application logic on both sides. Now, personally, I don't like to write code twice. I assume most of you do not like that. Now, there is a problem. Like I said, I need validation logic on the client side, but of course I also need validation on that server tier, on that mid tier. And most of the time, large chunks of that logic will be the same. Now, in normal cases, we would have to write that logic twice. Now, RIA Services will take care that the logic that lives on the server tier, on the mid tier, will be available on the client tier without me having to do anything for that. And you'll see later on that is like the magic that some people refer to that is happening with RIA Services. You'll see that there is actually code generation taking place when using RIA Services. So when you go from the server tier to the client tier, Visual Studio, in combination, of course, with RIA Services, will do code generation to have that application logic doubled on both sides. Okay, that is the problem. That is what RIA Services will actually solve. But what exactly is RIA Services then? Defining RIA Services is not an easy thing, actually. It's more than one thing. In fact, the first sentence on this slide more or less summarizes what a RIA Services actually is or what it does. It is actually a framework, it is tools, and it is services that allow us to build end-tier applications, RIA applications, using some prescriptive pattern. Now, of course, you do not understand anything more, I think, by now. So let's take a look at this sentence word by word. So the first word is, it is a framework. If you used RIA Services before, which could be in combination with Silverlight 3, because it already existed at that point, but I'm going to talk about that in just a second. You had to install RIA Services separately. Now with Silverlight 4, when you install the silverlighttools.exe, it is actually already installing RIA Services as part of that installation. So the framework does not have to be installed separately. So it is a framework that is made up of some assemblies that will go into your application, both on the mid-tier and on the client-tier. There will be assemblies on both sides. That is very important for a point that I'll be referring to later. So using RIA services, using the framework, it will be possible to use data coming from a database or a service over a data access layer on both sides. It will enable us to do end-to-end things with our data. We'll have end-to-end access to our data. And that's what RIA services as a framework really enables us to. Now, it's also tools. So again, with the installation of Visual Studio, it will install some, let's say, add-ons to Visual Studio. And what it will install is actually, for example, the code generation. I talked about the fact that your application logic will be, let's say, copied. It's not really copied, you'll see that later, but there will be code generation on the client side. That's part of the tooling that makes up RIA services. There is also some new windows that are made available in Visual Studio, and you'll see later on, we'll heavily use the so-called data sources window, which you might know from other technologies that are available using Visual Studio. You'll see that the data sources window is part of the RIA services tooling. And it's also services. RIA services will integrate with existing ASP.NET services, such as the membership API, most importantly the membership API. So that means that you will also be able to use, for example, your existing ASP.NET membership logins. That database can keep on working, and you'll be able to leverage this within RIA services. Now, also possibly when you have already used RIA services before with Silverlight 3, you may not know that this is actually the previously known ADO.NET data services. So this is now WCF RIA services. Now, why is it actually, did I say ADO.NET data services? It's actually .NET data services, I'm sorry for that. So it's .NET data services, all those names keep changing. So it's now RIA services. WCF RIA services in full. So you hear the part WCF in there. Why? Because actually Microsoft got feedback on the previously .NET RIA services, and they said, well, yeah, people said, well, we don't want yet another technology to work with services. We want the same technology. We already have WCF. Why not make it a part of the whole stack? And that's what they actually did. They made RIA services now as WCF RIA services, part of the WCF family. Now, these are a few of the most important design principles that were driving factors when designing RIA services. I already talked about the fact that RIA services will enable us end-to-end use of data. What Microsoft actually did, they took a look at ASP.NET developers. ASP.NET developers are very productive. They have all the tooling in Visual Studio they need to work with data, to make data-driven applications really fast. You can open the data sources window, also the Server Explorer, you can drag something on there, there will be a data source generated for you, there will be a data grid generated for you. All those things happen automatically. And that, at this point, we didn't have in Silverlight yet. So that means that, at this point, Silverlight developers were not as productive as ASP.NET developers. And Microsoft changed that with RIA services. You'll see that using RIA services, you can be very productive in building your data-driven applications for Silverlight. What you'll also see is that RIA services uses some prescriptive pattern. What I mean by that is you will do a few things, and from then on, let's say, a flow will start. Most of the time, that's the code generation that will actually start based on some conventions of the code that you write. RIA services will actually start a flow, and so you are more or less forced in some particular way of building your application. RIA services is mostly aimed at, of course, building data-driven applications, and you'll see that for some applications, RIA services is not a good fit. But we'll come back to that later. I also said in the beginning already that RIA services is not bound to a specific data access technology. RIA services does not access the database. It is not concerned with a SQL server access or whatever that you need to do. That's RIA services lives on top of the data access layer. And it can actually work with most common data access technologies, such as an Hibernate, Entity Framework, Link to SQL. It lives on top of those. I'll do my demos today with Entity Framework, but I could have used any other data access layer technology. I said that it's actually neutral to data access, but it's also more or less designed so that it's also possible to access RIA services from ASP.NET and actually work with RIA services from ASP.NET. It's architected that way. Okay. Now, this brings us to the point where I would normally dive into RIA services and explain you all the concepts using slides, a demo. As said, I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is actually explain you all the concepts that make up RIA services using a huge demo. We'll see some validation. How can we do validation with RIA services? We'll take a look, of course, at perhaps one of the most important features when it comes to the client side, and that's the domain data source. We'll also talk about shared code. We'll talk about metadata a bit. Metadata is, for example, if you used ASP.NET Dynamic Data, you could access metadata on your properties. You could add that in your code. RIA services will actually use the same technology. Of course, we're going to do querying. We're going to query our database for data. You'll see the code generation happening. We'll be able to authenticate ourselves. We'll see that RIA services integrates with ASP.NET membership. And I think we have the domain context, and that's also a very important point. And all these things make up WCF RIA services. So let's now go to a demo. Now, before I go to the demo, I have one big disclaimer to make. You'll see my Visual Studio crashing. I don't think there's another session where you heard that, but you'll see my Visual Studio crashing. It's not personal only on my laptop. It's happening with the current build of RIA services, which is the RC build, which causes an exception that closes down Visual Studio. Now, luckily, there is an SSD in this machine, so Visual Studio is rebooted in 5 seconds. So we should be fine, but it sometimes happens 5 times during this demo. Sometimes it doesn't happen at all. So I expect now it will happen like 10 times or so. So okay. I talked to the guys from the product team, and they know the issue. It's going to be solved in the version that will be released with Silverlight 4, which will be released in the beginning of April somewhere. So don't worry, this problem will go away. And it's also not happening apparently on all machines, but I have it on both my machines, so I can't help it. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to build a data-driven application. And I'm actually going to explain you first a scenario. It's a very simple scenario. I'm going to build a site, a RIA application, a Silverlight application, of course, which has a page on which I will show some cities. And when I click on one of the cities, I will go to another page on which there are some hotels available in that city. So a simple master detail scenario. Let me quickly show you the data schema that I have, the model that I have actually created for this application. So I have, it's not this one. I have to connect to my SQL Express. There we go. So my database is called City Hotels. And in there, I have two tables at this point. And those tables are city and hotel. So in the city, I have city ID, city name, country, language, population. I've also an image URL, which is the name of a physical file that I'll put later inside of my application. I'm not storing the actual image in my database. I'm actually storing only an image URL. And then in every city, I can have 0 or more hotels. I think you all understand what we're doing here. We have a hotel ID and a foreign key of city ID. And then we have a hotel name, website, and stuff like that. We have also one that is normally a currency. That's the room starter price. That's the price that hotels charge for the cheapest rooms. I've also this one, number of updates. That's one that I'll be using to check if the update actually took place later on. We'll do updates to this table, and you'll see that this one will increase whenever I do an update. So a very simple data schema that we have here. Okay, let's now go to Visual Studio. Now, for my application, I will be using the Silverlight business application template. Now, perhaps a word of explanation there. I can use RIA services in any Silverlight application. So I can open Silverlight application, the standard Silverlight application here as well, and use RIA services from there as well. From then, when I check use RIA services, Visual Studio will make the correct references in both projects, so I can use RIA services in any Silverlight application. Now, I'm using here the business application. For the people who already know Silverlight, from Silverlight 3, Microsoft added the Silverlight navigation application. And the navigation application was a type of application, it's actually a template for a type of application, that makes navigating within your application in Silverlight easier. It adds the notion of a frame that's comparable with a master page and a page within that master page within ASP.NET. You simply could then navigate from page 1 to page 2 within that frame. Now, why am I explaining that? Because the Silverlight business application is actually a RIA services-enabled Silverlight navigation application. I think that there was too long of a name to put there, so they simply made it Silverlight business application. So it's simply a navigation application with all the references to RIA services already in place. So I'm going to build my application, and I'm going to call it Silverlight Hotel Bookings. There we go. So we're going to use the business application template. And when I simply run this, you'll see already that I am actually, that I already have a navigation application. Let's quickly run this when it's ready, executing the template. Don't think it got my F5. There we go. So when I'm now running the application, you'll see a normal, for the people who know it, this is looks like an exact replica of the Silverlight navigation application. What I can do, I can easily navigate within my application. You see at the top that we can go to, we are actually navigating to a specific URL, so this makes it possible to actually navigate within your application. So I can copy this link, copy it, send it to someone by email, and he can then call me back right to this page. So that's what a navigation application enabled with Silverlight 3. So what is also available here is the ability to log in. I can say I want to register. We'll do that later on. But you see, that's already available for you. So let's close this one down. There we go. Can someone keep track of the number of times it will crash? Okay, so that was the first time. Okay, this is fun. Thank you very much. Let's try opening a second one that may be not doing this. Yeah, there we go. So we'll leave that one behind. Oh, it's ready. It's ready. Okay. So we already have one crash so far. So let's now start building application. Okay, so the first thing that I'll do, of course, is building my data access. So what I'm going to do is I am going to use Entity Framework 4. I'm going to use a very basic model here that is going to be a one-to-one mapping on my database, and I'm going to call this, let's say, a hotel booking model. I'm going to say, okay, generate it from the database. I'm going to use the City Hotels database. This actually doesn't have anything to do with RIA services. I'm going to say generate my city and hotel table, and then click Finish, and will now generate two entities for me, being the city and hotel entity, that, of course, have the same relation between them. There's a city that can have zero or more hotels in them, linked to them. Of course, there are also two entities generated for them, and I will be using those entities within my application. The entity framework generated for me, if we take a look at this file, it generated for me both a city entity and a hotel entity. Okay. So still no, so far, no RIA services inside. Let's change that, finally. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a RIA service. I'm going to add a domain service. The domain service is comparable to any other service. It's the endpoint that my Silverlight client application will access. It's the endpoint on the server tier, on the mid tier. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say add here, select new item, and then I'm going to select RIA or domain service class. You can find it in both ways. And I'm going to call my service hotel booking service. There we go. Oh, I have made an error. I should first have built my application. Let me do that first. This is also a bug that I have noticed personally. It may be that it's not picking up. This is the tooling of RIA services. It should now pick up my entities. And it often doesn't pick them up if you haven't built it before you started the first times. So let's try that again. Hotel booking service. And as you see, the bug is still there. So now I have to restart Visual Studio once more. The guy who's keeping track, that's number two. So normally we should be fine now. Let's try it again. I'm going to do a rebuild of my solution. There we go. And I'm going to add my RIA service for the third time, my domain service actually. So I'm going to select RIA again here and give it the name Hotel Booking Service again. And now we're fine. As you can see now, it's now picking up that I have two entities available inside of my application that it can actually work with. So for now, I won't go in any detail. I'll say, okay, those two entities will be needed inside of my application. I'm going to use those. I'm also going to check that we will have that Visual Studio can also generate metadata for us. We'll use the metadata later on in the demo. Just for now, keep in mind that I've actually checked it here, that we're going to use it. Okay, so I'm going to click OK now. Now we have actually generated a domain service. It has already generated for me a lot of code. I'm going to delete that for now. Let's take a look at what we have now. We now have the hotel booking service, which has the attribute applied to it, enable client access. This is assigned to RIA services that this service can be accessed from client-side applications. Then we see that it inherits from link to entities domain service in City Hotel Entities, and City Hotel Entities is actually the context that was generated by my link to entity framework. Entity framework. So this is now the context that we'll be using throughout the application. If we are, of course, not using entity framework, we won't be inheriting from the link to entities domain service, but we'll be inheriting from the default domain service. I'll show that later on as well. So I have deleted the methods that were here before. I'm going to add one myself. So what I'm going to add, let me first copy it in. What I'm going to add is the method getCities. And that getCities will return an iQueryable in city. So what we're doing here is actually we're really using link's power. We will be using queries. I come to the fact that we're using queries later on quite extensively, but remember, we are actually creating iQueryables on which we can later on add perhaps extra parameters. What this will do, it will simply retrieve all cities ordered by name. Now I'm going to build my application. There we go. And I'm going to use, of course, now this domain service. Before we're actually going to use it, I'm going to show all files here, click the show all files, and I clicked it on the wrong one. There we go. There is now an extra directory created for me. It's called generated code, and it has one file in there as a Silverlight Hotel Bookings.web. As you can see, the same namespace as my web application in which I created the domain service. .g, the g of generated, .cs. This is the generated code that RIA Services has created for me. It's quite a long file, and we'll take a look at this file in the Under the Hood section later on. Now, let's first use this. So what I'm going to do quickly now, it's not really part of the demo that I will be building. I'm going to quickly try retrieving all the cities from my application. So what I'm going to do is, on my designer, I'm going to, there we go, please, open the toolbox, there we go. I'm going to select the data grid here for now. I'm going to put one on there, make it large enough. Visual Studio is now adding the correct references for the data grid. And now I have to, of course, talk to my domain service and ask it to load the required data. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to write a few lines of code. In fact, I'm going to copy them. So I'm going to paste in a few lines of code in the code behind of my home page. And that's located here. So what I'm going to say here should be, needs a reference here. There we go. So what I'm going to say is I'm going to instantiate a hotel booking context. Okay, where did this context actually come from? Well, it is, if we take a look at it, whoops, that was not the correct one. It is located in the generated file silverlighthotelbookings.web.g.cs. There we have the context, and that's the client context that will keep track of all the entities that are loaded, and it will do change tracking. We'll see that later on as well. This context is the most important part on the client side. So we earlier added the domain service, which was the endpoint at the server side, and the data context is the part on my Silverlight application that will actually make the link between the two tiers. So there we have the two endpoints, the domain service and the domain context on the client side. For each domain service that we will create, we'll add the RIA services tooling will add another domain context. Okay. So what I've now done here is I've set set the item source of my data grid to the cities property. Okay, now where did the cities property come from all of a sudden? Well, again, if we take a look, it was generated again in the silverlight.web.cs. It is also generated using the code generation of RIA services. Why did it actually generate this cities property? If we take a look back at the domain service, we'll see that I asked it to retrieve I created a method actually that returned an iQueryable in cities. iQueryable in cities, when that is noticed by RIA services, it will automatically generate for me the cities properties. Because it actually, let's say, thinking that I will be using this cities property in my data binding scenario. So it's automatically generating this for me. And finally, you'll also see that I have to specifically ask to load data inside of that city's property. By default, the data is not loaded. All data, all service communication within Silverlight is asynchronous. We have to explicitly ask to load, then something will trigger, and in this case, the query will execute. So we'll actually have to ask RIA services to load data in the city's property. There is nothing loaded by default. This is the asynchronous character of all service communication that you see back here in RIA services as well. And also, of course, there might be several methods on my domain service that will return an iQueryable in city. So by default, RIA services would not know which method we actually want to execute. So it really needs us to say, well, now load in the data. So if all is good, I can now run this, and we should be able to see a very basic list of cities with, of course, no layout whatsoever done to it yet. There we go. It's not loading the data. Ah, I think I didn't set in my XAML. There we go. I didn't set this to true. There we go. It should give us a different result. And there we go. There we have our cities. Okay. Now, this is actually the basic demo. This is like showing what it does. Number three. So this is actually not part of my end-to-end scenario. We'll be, let's say, deleting this part. And we'll actually now be doing the end-to-end part in which we first retrieve the data. We have already a method on the service to retrieve the cities. We'll now start using that in a real scenario using more of the tooling that is available in Visual Studio with RIA services. Okay, so let me quickly delete my data grid again. So there we go. I'm going to delete this for now, the scroll viewer. And remove all this, and I'm going to make it in split view again. Perhaps switch again. Yeah, okay. So now we have deleted that, and I'm also going to delete the code behind. We're not going to use that anymore. Okay. Now, I had already built the get cities query on the domain service. Now, the tooling of RIA services has added in my Visual Studio a data sources window. Let me open it. There it is. And it is now noticing that I have, in this case, the... Let me try. Come on. This is not good. It's not allowing me to change. This is not normal. Let's try that again. Now, where is the data sources window? It's under data. Show data sources. It's not a good idea that it's not allowing me to change the types. Let me reopen Visual Studio again. Seem to have quite a lot of problems with it today, so... It's always removing the drop-downs. They were here for just a few seconds and then it was gone. This is bad because I cannot open them. Okay, so I'm going to try something else for now. I'm going to try it using this one. That's not a good thing. I have some places where I have some steps available during the demo. I hope it's appearing here. Otherwise, we use the steps from now on, so sorry for that. It's, again, the tooling that is not doing what it should do. Let's build this application first. There we go. It should now be opening the data sources window again. So open views. It's, again, not showing the drop-downs. That's this bad. Okay, so... We'll have to see how far we can get now. This is a big problem. Okay, for now, we'll first show how the tooling works, and we'll come back to it later. So we have the data sources window that should normally make it possible for me to drag my data on my interface as a grid, as well as details. For example, let me open the data sources window again. Ah, now it's there. Look. Okay, thank you. So again, it is possible to drag this on the interface as data grid as well as details. So we'll try dragging it on as a grid. For example, I can also say I want to change the image URL. I will later on be making use of this as an image inside of my data grid. So I can change the data type to an image, in fact. So it's going to actually generate me a different template column. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag this on. First, I'm going to create a few whole rows. And then I'm going to drag it on as a data grid. There we go. And yes, now we're lucky. It's working. So I'm going to make this go over the entire interface. And now I should be able to also change the columns. That's the properties window I need. So, for example, I can now say, well, I don't want the city name to be the third column. I want this to be the first column. I have all this tooling now available inside of my Visual Studio. This is, of course, part of Visual Studio itself. For example, we can also ask it to move the image URL to the top. Now, what has this been generating for us? Let's take a look. I'm going to make the XAML a bit bigger because otherwise it's too difficult to see. What has this now been generating for us? Of course, it has generated a data grid for me. That's quite normal. But let's take a look at the binding of this item source. It is now bound to an element which is called city domain data source. The city domain data source is comparable to an object data source in ASP.NET. You can actually look at the domain data source in the exact same way. Now, where is this domain data source located? Well, it's located right here at the top. So this is the domain data source that is linked to the domain context that lives in code behind. And that you can see here. on this domain context to fill my grid, what will I be executing? I will be executing the get cities query, and that's of course the query that we generated, that we wrote on the domain service itself. Okay, now what I'm going to do, what I'm going to try doing, is open my designer again. And what I'm also going to do is, for example, add a pager. Let me open the toolbox again, and within this I'm going to add a data pager. It should be right up here. I'm going to move it around a bit. Now that data pager should also be linked to that domain data source. It should know that there are, for example, 10 elements or 15 elements and that it can page. So we have to say it has to be linked to this same, to the same domain data source. So I'm going to drag it on simply. There we go. If you take a look at the binding that this has created, you'll see that it has also created a binding for this data pager, and it is linked to the same domain data source. I will put this to 3, so it's actually a bit, you'll see, because I think there are 15 records in there, otherwise we won't see the paging happening for real. Let's now take a look if we can see our data coming in as paged in the data grid. There we go. We have 4 pages, which is good. I think there are 12 cities or some, and we can page through it. That's good. Again, I didn't write any code for this. This is really fast to build this way. And the first problem that we see here is the image URL is empty. That is quite normal. Why is it normal? Because let's take a look at the code that Visual Studio has generated for me. It has actually generated a template column, which is fine. Within that template column, it is binding to an image URL. That image URL is, in this case, only a file name that is stored in the database. So I'm going to change that. I'm going to actually add a converter to my application for that. The converter, for the people who don't know, is actually a class that can that you can use to hook into a in the binding process to do like late changes within the data binding. So I'm going to add a converter here, and I'm going to add a class in there. And I'm going to call that class image converter. There we go. I'm going to paste in some code because I'm not going to type the entire converter myself. And as you can see, the converter is quite simple. Every converter has to implement the iValue converter interface. The converter is simply going to paste in the name of the full URL, actually. First, to make this correct, I have to, of course, look at the real URL where my application is running on, and that is 1805. So I'm going to change this to 1805. There we go. And, of course, I also have to drag in the images, otherwise we won't be seeing them. I'm going to drag them into my Visual Studio project. Should be this one. Oh, damn it. First, open my Solution Explorer and then drag them in. There we go. Of course, now I still need to instantiate my converter inside of my code. And for that, we have also Visual Studio's tooling that will help us. We have in Visual Studio the document outline window. And the document outline is a handy tool that allows me to easily navigate within my XAML structure. I have a data grid which has columns, and within those columns I have a data grid template column, the image URL column, and that has a cell template which has a data template. And that's the image. Now I want to couple my converter to that image. Let me first build my application, because otherwise it will not pick up the converter. There you go. Thank you for collapsing that again. So now I will need my properties window, and I'm going to edit the binding. So all this tooling is now available in Visual Studio 2010 to make it possible to edit my bindings visually. You can really work a lot faster instead of typing your data binding code yourself. So what I'm going to do is here, I'm going to say, well, I'm going to instantiate a new converter. It's going to be the image converter. And it's going to generate me again some code. You can see that here. We don't need to move this two-way for the image. You can see that it has now added the image converter inside of my code as the converter for the image binding. So if all goes well, we should now be able to see the images appearing inside of our application. There we go. The images are visible. Now, of course, we wanted to build like a master detail application where the hotels were to be shown for the cities. Let's now do that. The first thing that I want to do is I want to click on a button inside of my grid to go to the second page, which has the hotels information. Let me quickly add the hotel information. So I'm going to add a new view inside of a new page, actually, inside of my application. And that's the hotels page. This is simply a new Silverlight page that I'm going to navigate to from inside of my grid. Also, I need, of course, a second query. That is the get hotels query. And that is going to be added on my domain service. So I'm simply adding a new functionality to my service, and that is in this case the get hotels, which in this case will return an iQueryable in hotel. The next thing I need to do is I need to, let's say, activate this navigation. How am I going to do that? Well, we can, in our data grid, and that's in here, add a new column. There we go. Okay, I'm going to paste in an extra column which contains a simple button. Let's paste the button in within the columns collection. There we go. So this is now simply an extra column inside of my data grid which has a button. When I click on that button, I want to navigate to the hotels page. Remember, we're using the business application template, but in fact, we are using a navigation application, so we can use all the functionalities of the navigation application. So I am going to generate some code here in the code behind. And then I'm going to actually add the navigation step, which is quite easy to add. I'm going to say, let me first add this missing reference. I'm going to ask what is the current item in the data grid, which is the currently selected item inside of the data grid using the domain source that is coupled to it. And then I'm going to ask the navigation service, which is responsible for navigating within navigation applications, to navigate to a new page, and that is in this case the hotels page. Behind it, there is some URI mapping using URI mapper going on that will link hotels to hotels.xaml. Passing in the city ID of the selected city. Okay, now the only thing that we still need to do, of course, is adding the hotels grid on the page. That might be a difficult one again, if the tooling will do the same with us as it did earlier. So let's first build the application, so it will pick up inside of the data source that I have added a new query inside of my domain source. So let's try it. And it seems as if the demogods are looking quite good. There we go. We will add the hotels grid on this page. I will remove the rose pen, so it will only fill up the first one. There we go. And now I'm going to again do a reset layout all, and it will fill up the first cell of my page. Let me quickly remove a few of those superfluous columns. I'm going to say edit the columns collection here. For example, let's remove the city ID. Let's remove the hotel ID. The image URL for now. Let's remove that one as well. Let's put the hotel name as the first element. If I'm not mistaken, I think I should be able now to navigate from page 1 to page 2, so from the cities page to the hotels page and show you a list of hotels. Let's try it out. So I only actually have hotels for London and Paris. So that means that if I click on Amsterdam, I should not be getting some hotels. And still I do. Somebody see the error? The hotel, that's the city ID? Yeah, indeed, we're not passing the city ID, that's correct. So to pass data to the domain service, it's actually nothing special. There we go. It's actually nothing special. We can simply pass an ID. We can simply pass a parameter to the domain service as we are used to. Now I have to check that I'm using the correct one again, this one. So indeed, the city ID is not being used in the domain service. So we'll add that in. Let's go to the domain service. And in here, I have to say add the city ID. There we go. And then we can say where p.cityid is equal to cityid. That's the one. This should work now, and we should now only be seeing hotels for Paris and London, and all other cities should not be showing hotels. Let's try that out. So let's open Amsterdam again. That's fine, there are no hotels showing. And if I now go to London, not physically then, there are no hotels showing either. That's not a good thing. Why are they not showing? City ID is 2. Did I make an error in my thing here? Let's put a break in here. Should be running fine. It's not hitting the break. That's weird. Let's take a look at the generated code here. Come on, thank you. Oh, there we go. Let's take a look at what it generated here. So we have the hotel domain data source, which is bound to the hotel booking context. That is fine. And now it has been linking to the get hotels query, which should be fine. Anyone see what I did wrong? Sorry? Yes, didn't I add that? I'm passing in, I think. Oh, indeed, I forgot to add my parameter. Thank you. If I should have followed my scenario correctly, then I shouldn't have had this problem. There we go. Indeed, I am not adding the parameter I'm not passing actually the parameter. So what we're doing here indeed is to the domain data source adding a query parameter which is called city ID, and that is retrieved using the navigation context.query string, which is actually from within Silverlight an ability to check, to actually retrieve the parameters that are being passed from page to page. And now we should be able to see the hotels for London and Paris. So let's try that again. Let's open London. Now it's hitting the correct. And now we are able to see the hotels from London. Now another thing that I want to do is, I now have only added data grids. I can also add details. And from there, we can start the editing process. Let's take a look at some code for this. So I'm going to open the hotels page again. There we go. And within this hotels page, I am going to open the data source window again. And now I can also, for example, say I want my hotel to be shown in detail way. So I select the details option. And I can drag this on this designer interface. And you'll see that it's now generating for me, oops, don't go too high. It's now generating for me a simple grid with some bound text boxes and labels and stuff. It's actually simply doing the generating of the data binding code for me. Okay, now let's run this. It should now be able, when I switch hotels, show me the details of this hotel. Let's go to London page again, and as you can see at the bottom, I'm switching hotels, and it's actually switching hotels in this grid as well, so in the actual grid. Now let's try something else. For example, let's say I want to update the number of rooms here to, for example, 200, and there is an error raised by Visual Studio, which is quite normal because at this point I have not specified what to do when I'm doing updates. If you take a look at the error, it's saying that it does not support the edit operation on the entity set, which is normal. We didn't specify how to do an update on hotels. So let's try and add that. I'm going to add a new operation, and it is called the update hotel operation on my domain service. It's this one. Let's open the domain service again. And I'm going to paste in a third method, and that's update hotel. That update hotel is simply going to do some changes. It's going to actually also retrieve the original based on the current hotel that I'm passing in. And then I'm going to do some changes. I'm going to add one to the room starter price, and then I'm going to add it again to the database. I'm actually going to submit it back to the database. Okay, so if we run the application now, but I'm going to first make it possible to save, I'm going to add, for example, a simple button. There we go. Let me add a button here. Let's say submit here. Open the properties window again. Let's call this button. Let's give this button some content, submit. And when I click on that button, I'm actually going to perform the submit of the changed data. So I'm going to say this dot, that's the domain data source, hotel domain data source dot submit changes. There we go. Normally, I should now be able to submit the changes that I've done on the client side back to the server. Let's try that. So let's go back to London. Select one of the hotels there. Let's take this one. And let's save, change this to 200. And I'm going to now submit it. And I don't know if you've noticed, but this has now gone from 3 to 4. And if we do a refresh, so notice that this one is now on 200. If we do a refresh of the page, there we go, it is still at 200. So it's actually committed to the database. So I've now been able to save from my client side back to my service. So now we have actually done the end-to-end scenario. Now, there's one thing left at this point. In fact, two things that I want to still show you. We can do some validation with RIA services as well. Now, for that, in the beginning, remember, I added those metadata classes to my domain data service. I actually let it generate metadata classes for my entities. Let's, for example, say that we want the user to always enter a hotel name. If there is no hotel name entered, the update should fail. So in my hotel booking service.metadata class, which was generated automatically for me, we have two classes that are marked with the metadata type attribute, which refers to the metadata class that is containing the metadata for this class. So this city metadata class refers to containing metadata about the city class, and that city class was generated by the entity framework. So for example, if we go to the hotel, that's exactly the same. I want to verify that the hotel name is always filled in. So I'm going to add a error message here. There we go. So I'm going to say that the user always has to enter a name for the hotel. If not, I'm not going to allow the commit. So let me try this. Let's run the application. Let's go back to the London hotel. And if I'm now removing the name, as you can see, hopefully, it will now do the validation automatically for me. We're not able to commit because it's now generating an error on the client side. Why is this error there? Well, because RIA Services code generation actually took this error and also generated it on the client side. So we can easily check that. Let's open the generated code folder. Here. Yeah, thank you. And let's check for this. And as you can see, we have the hotel name property here with the same required attribute on it. So it's automatically keeping those two classes in sync for me. So I did not have to write this on the client side as well. But the final thing that I want to show you in the demo is now at this point, my service is open. Everyone can access this. I have not leveraged ASP.NET's membership API yet. And it's actually quite simple to do so. For example, let's say that we do not want everyone to access my methods on my domain service. So I'm simply going to say requires authentication. When I do this now, it will fail. It will not be able, I will not be able to get on my client my list of cities. As you can see, we get an error stating that operation, access to the operation get cities was denied. Now, how can we fix this? Well, by logging in. So I'm going to log in. I'm going to create a user account. Let me quickly fill in some details. Type a default password. There we go. And click OK. It's now using actually simple ASP.NET membership API. And when you refresh now, we are now back authenticated. I said it requires authentication, so every user that is authenticated on the site can now do a login. So with that, we have actually finished the demo scenario. Sorry for some of the interruptions that we had. These were, of course, not planned to happen. Let's now take a step back, and let's now, for the rest of the... We have about 15 minutes left. Let's now take a look at what is happening under the hood, what's happening behind the scenes with RIA services. Let's first take a look at the design time view. As you saw, there were two projects generated for me. You can say that's always the case in the Silverlight scenario. I have the Silverlight application and the hosting website. Well, there is a difference here. There's actually quite a big difference. RIA service applications are actually is one solution containing two projects, but I consider those two projects as being one project. They're really tied together. There's a difference than when you're, for example, building a REST API, using some WCF for, with REST enabled, then you're most of the time building a REST layer, and several applications can access that REST layer. With RIA services, the services that you're building are most of the time aimed for one solution, for one client solution, for one Silverlight project. It's tied together, the service, the domain service project, and the RIA Silverlight application. Those two projects are actually part of one project. However, they are, in fact, two projects within your Silverlight solution, within your solution. So we have the client project and the server project. Let's consider them as one project. And what do we have there? We have a data access layer, and we used Entity Framework. That generated some entities for me, and on the client, we have some views that we want to use those entities in, to view, to edit, and so on and so on. Now, what did we then do? We added a domain service. The domain service is the endpoint at the mid-tier site, at the mid-tier or the server tier project. And then, when we do a build, there we go, when we do a build, RIA services tooling is actually going to kick in. It's going to take a look at what has been built, what has been generated from assemblies-wise then. And based on what has been generated, it will generate some code on the client side. That's what RIA services tooling will do. It will generate some code for you on the client side. And what code will it be actually creating? Both a domain context as well as entities. You saw that I was using on the client side city and hotel entities as if I was working in the same project than I was at the domain service site. Let's take a look at this in some more detail. I'm going to quickly show actually the same demo more or less, but we're going to dive in some of the parts that take a look more at the generated code or what is happening when I'm doing the design. Let's close this for now. We don't need this anymore. Let's first take a look at the domain service again. That's this one. So I already explained to you that enable client access will be a trigger for the RIA services tooling, that this domain service can also be accessed from the client side. If this attribute is not there, there will be no code generation for this domain service. So the main service in question here is the hotel booking domain service, which inherits from the link to entity's domain service. As said, we can also, if you're, for example, using an Hibernate or something, we'll probably be inheriting from the domain service class. Yeah. And within this class, I have some queries, some operations which return iQueryables, in this case in city and in hotel. So, as I said, we're fully leveraging link here. We're actually saying I'm returning an iQueryable, and when I'm doing the paging on the client side, what I actually be doing then is appending the extra parameters from this page, from this record to this record on this page. I'm actually going to append those on the server side, so I'm actually always executing the optimal query. You see that we're not retrieving all records, but we'll only retrieve those records that are relevant. Based on this, RIA Services will do code generation. Now, this code generation can actually happen in two ways. Either we can follow some conventions, and that's what I'm doing here, and that's also the default. The conventions also refer to the fact that we are using the prescriptive pattern. We have to follow some basic rules. In this case, I'm retrieving an iQueryable in city, and when I am retrieving an iQueryable in city, the flow will start and the code generation will happen on the client side. So that's what I mean by the type of things that we have to follow in order for RIA Services to kick in and to work. Okay, so this is what we do on the server side. On the client side, as said, we have some code generation happening for us. The code is generated in the generated underscore code directory. And let's take a look at what exactly is inside of this generated code directory. So we have the hotel booking domain context. For the created domain service, we have a generated domain context being created for us, as well as both a hotel and a city entity. Let's take a look at the domain context. On this domain context, I have a few methods that are being generated for me. Let's first take a look at them. These are the getCities query and the getHotels query. These are generated for me. Again, why? Because based on convention, these will be generated. If I do not want to use the convention, and the convention is here returning an iQueryable in city, if I do not want to do that, but I still want some code being generated for me, I can use attributes. I have not shown the attribute way here because the convention is actually the default, but we can also use attributes on the domain service operations to have code generation pick them up and generate code for them as well. This is the default way of doing it. We only have an hour to talk about all those things, so we cannot show all the options we have here. As well as those client-side queries that are being generated, again, it's queries that are being generated on the client side, we also have those properties that we saw in the beginning of the demo that were generated for us as well. Because it sees that we are using an iQueryable in city, it will generate for me city's property. And finally, we also saw that it gave us an error when It gave us an error when we tried to update hotel without the update hotel method being in there. And that was because of the fact that the entity set, and the entity set perhaps we'll explain in just a second, was not allowing any updates on neither the hotel or on the city entities. Let me quickly remove the update again. Put this one in comment. So. And if we now go back to the generated code, that sometimes happens, this one. That's also something that sometimes happens. It's because a file is open, I've noticed. I'm going to skip this for now because we don't have enough time to go through the rest otherwise. So let's go back to the context. In any way, whenever I delete the it did it anyway. So whenever I delete the update methods, it will not allow the updates on neither of the entities. So you see that it's now set to none. Perhaps a little word on the way that the domain context manages its entities. So it will load the entities to the client side inside of the domain context and keep track of all the entities that have been loaded. It does change tracking on those entities. It will actually, and I'll talk about that in just a second, it will actually keep all those entities cached at the client side, and when we do updates later on, it will send those updates back to the server. That's the entity set concept that's happening on the client side. And I don't have to run this because it's the same application with some more layout, but what you see now is domain service, the server side, generated domain context with entities on the client side, and for all operations that I define on my domain service, client-side queries are being generated for me. Okay, let's go back to the slides. I have one slide here that captures what I've done. So I have created the domain service, set the enable client access attribute on that domain service, and inherit from domain service. In this case, we inherited link to entities domain service. This triggered the creation of the client-side domain context, hotel booking domain context in our case, which inherited from domain context. The iquery will in cities, get city, generated, gave the birth actually to creating the cities class and the client-side query. And the update will actually set the entity set operations to edit instead of none to make updates from the client-side possible as well. Now, what actually happens when we actually run the application? Because I haven't looked at that yet. So when I start my application, I ask to, for example, load all cities entities. I ask to load all cities. I want to view all cities. So my view will ask to my domain context, give me all the cities. The domain context will then check if it already has loaded those cities because it will keep them cached locally. If it doesn't have them, it will perform a query to the domain service. The only thing that is going over the line is the query that it wants to be executed. So if I want, for example, all cities that are between row 4 and row 10, it will create a query on the client side, send that query to the domain service. That query will then be appended on the iqueryable get cities. It will perform this query on the database. And then afterwards, it will send back entities to the domain context. And of course, the domain context will then give those entities back to the view. When I do some changes, for example, we change the hotel entity, I will submit those changes inside of my view. The domain context will then check which entities have changed, build up a change set. It's actually using a unit of work pattern here. It will submit, of course, only the changes, the changed entities, and it will be able to submit several at the same time. These are being submitted. The domain service tries to do the update towards the data access layer. The results are sent back to the client, and then the results can be shown inside of the view. I'm going to skip this for now. Let me quickly show this. I have a few minutes left. Let me quickly show this in action. So what I've done here is I have overridden the load of the domain context. So as you can see here, I've written a partial class, hotel booking domain context, in which I have the load operation overridden. Which it's simply executing the normal load, but I've actually overridden the load operation here. So we can see the query that is being executed whenever I perform the call to the database, to the domain service, I'm sorry. This is what the domain context will send towards the domain service. So the query is being executed, as you can see. I hope it's visible. Yeah, I have to be really quick about this one. Yeah, I can do it this way, and it's also possible. So as you can see here, it's now building a query client-side, take the first 4. That's the query that will be sent from the domain context to the domain service. The domain service will then retrieve this query and only get those 4. If we let it run, and let's ask for the next 4, the query that will now be executed will be skip 4, and take 4. There we go. Skip 4 and take 4. So this query is sent to the service. The domain service picks it up, appends it to the existing query, and will then execute the optimal query on the database. I don't have time to show updates anymore, but I would quickly want to show you still. Whoops, have it running still. Quickly show you the last two slides that we have here. Authentication is also possible to use from RIA services. You saw earlier that we used the enable the attribute on the domain service. I'll show it in the demo. We can ask the user to be authenticated, but we can also ask that users should be of a specific role. For example, here in my domain service, I have enabled that the user has to be authenticated to do anything on the domain service, but he has to be an administrator if he wants to do an update. If I run this, you'll see that I have to log in to be able to do any retrieve any data from the domain service. So it gives me an error that we already saw. I'm going to try logging in. There we go. Oops, not correct. Let me register first then. Quickly register. Username is too short. There we go. Oops, now I'm making a mess out of it. There we go. Okay, now I'm logged in. So I can now retrieve the data. That should be fine. But when I want to do an update, we should still get an error. There we go. Let's try changing this to 200. And if I now click on the submit button, I'm not going to go through it. You see that the update hotel is not allowing access because it is also denying me to do an update. So with that, I would like to finish off because we have gone a few minutes over the time now. I'll post the slides on my blog so you can download them from there. You can see the do's and don'ts. So I'd like to finish up with the fact that RIA services makes it possible to easily build end-tier applications. It is now built on the power of WCF, making it possible to configure RIA services like normal WCF services. I hope you've seen the key concepts. There is a lot more to discover in RIA services, so I invite you to download them, play with them, and you can check out whatever else they have in store for you. So this is the link where you can get the download, so silverlight.net/get-started/RIA-services, and I'll put the blog, on my blog, I'll put the PowerPoint and demos tomorrow. Thank you for being here. I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.